I believe that some of you have heard Harry and know the terrific message he does carry. Harry is the delegate, chairman delegate from Southern California Panel 1. His home group is in Glendale, and he hasn't had a drink for 9 years. And I think this is real wonderful, and these are the type of people who I always listen to, because these are the things that I want to hear. How do you stay sober for this long a time? Harry has been very active in Alcoholics Anonymous ever since his first meeting, and it's with great pleasure that I introduce to you now Harry Hallock of Los Angeles.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and I should say good afternoon. It shows I'm used to speaking at night. I don't know whether I need this thing or not. It irritates me. But it's a pleasure to be able to talk to anybody in Alcoholics Anonymous, primarily first because I am an alcoholic. I told you my name is Harry Hallock. I should say Harry H. Being a delegate, I'm supposed to go by the book. Then after I have completed that formality, I will again say my name is Harry Hallock, and I am a grateful alcoholic. I am a happy alcoholic. Is there any newcomers here, like your leader of this meeting said, that he attended his first meeting at a conference? If there be any newcomers here today, tear down the barricade, open your ears and your eyes, and open your heart. Because like he, it may be the first time and the only time that you may be able to come in. And then again, if there are any newcomers, and when I identify myself, don't be afraid. If you stop drinking now, you won't have to go as far as I went. But if you continue to drink, you might bypass me. I spent 15 years in the Maryland State Penitentiary. I've been to Lincoln Heights 168 times. I've served 9 years as a common drunk in L.A. And I qualify as an alcoholic. And as I stand before you today, with joy in my heart, with gratitude also, I feel as tall as the Empire State Building and as wide as the state of Texas. Because in the years of my sobriety, I have got up out of the gutter, left the drunk tank floor, walked away from in front of the judge, and came home. Came home to a fellowship of men and women that extended their hands and their love and their society, that cut away the barricades of resentment, done away with hypocrisy, and done away with all the idle gossip that so many of us used before. And being a delegate is one of them. So many of you associate general service with something that was born in New York and nothing to be made of it. So many of you give the newcomer the only impression that when he walks into the group is a pot of coffee and donuts. And as this member grows and grows in his sobriety, he very seldom remembers chapter 5 or chapter 3 more about alcoholism. He knows very little of the 12 traditions, because so many times it's not read. And when he hears anything about New York, he thinks, what has New York got to do with Alcoholics Anonymous? Were we to remove everything from this very meeting connected with general service, we'd remove AA. Prior to going to New York, I heard all the various stories about who I would like and who I wouldn't like. They were all lies. When I arrived in New York at my first meeting, when I sat in the middle of that assembly, I was awed. I was overwhelmed. I was speechless, because a liar, a thief, and a cheat had arisen again and been accepted into the world, proving that Alcoholics Anonymous can circulate a dirty piece of linen and clean it and press it and make it usable again. And as I sat there that Monday morning,
I thought of your love and your faith and your confidence that you had in sending me there. And I made a vow that in my term of 2 years, I would work day and night to do everything I could for the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, you can become a GSR simply from your group. They won't like you. They'll irritate you. They'll annoy you. And they'll ignore you. And you can shun it off and say, well, I won't pay any attention to it. Then if you hung around for about 2 years, you might be made a committeeman when they don't want anything to do with their panel. And this can go on for 2 years. And then if you come from L.A. like I do, about after 4 or 5, 6 years, if you're a committeeman, you assemble in Plummer Park on a November morning, they might make you a delegate. And then when they do, you go to New York. Now you're allowed 2 trips to New York, and you go once a week in April. And when you arrive, you start working from the first morning on Monday until the last meeting on Saturday. And then you can come home and you can become a dignitary in name only, or you can come home and work day and night for the next 2 years. Now, the records of the delegates that I have followed, I will say nothing about. But at the end of my 2 years, when I turn over my record, the bulk will prove the amount of work that has been accomplished. So don't take a job in this fellowship if you're not going to put your whole heart and soul into it. And if you take this job, know what it's all about. Read the 39 pieces of literature that's put out by New York. Read the Third Legacy Manual. Study the 12 concepts that so much is said about. And then when a newcomer or a member walks up to you and asks you what a GSR is, be able to tell him or her. And read the traditions and read Chapter 3 and Chapter 5, because this is Alcoholics Anonymous. I love to call the big book my Bible. Chapter 5 with the 12 must-steps to me and my 10 commandments. And the 12 traditions I have to live by. You see, I have larceny in my heart today. When I came here, you didn't take me down to the River Jordan and baptize me. You didn't wash all my sins away. I didn't come seeking Christianity. I came for sobriety. And isn't it wonderful that you didn't lie to me from the very first time I came here? And it's so remarkable that I have bypassed men of 20 and 24 years of sobriety and reaching the highest post or whatever you want to call it in Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't do it financially or educationally. I did it by participation, activity in AA. Every hour of the day can be involved in AA. The number of jails that are serviced by the Institutional Committee. The 6 Institutional Committees in L.A. have grown and grown and grown. So often a man walked out of an institution, and I've heard it said time and time again, if he had not been met at the gate by an AA member, he would have hunted the nearest bar. To those of you that have never gone to jail or a hospital, this doesn't seem so important. But to a drunk that is laid in the gutter, this does. It's not the color of your blood, the money you have in your pocket, the home that you live in, or the number of cars that you drive. Bill said in 1950, and a reprint was made in the grapevine in 1955, Alcoholics Anonymous is a sacrifice. We give. We sacrifice. We give of each other so that we may live. That we don't store it up in warehouses to take it out and look at it for our own selfish purpose. And oh, what wonderful teachers you are. And if there's any of you here today that have a barricade in your heart, let go of it. If it's any of you that have a resentment, drop it. shake hands with each other. Make that smile that you have on your face come true. And make that ring to your laughter honest. Because there isn't everybody that can be an alcoholic. I'm glad that I'm an alcoholic. If I had never become an alcoholic, I would never have met you wonderful people. I would never have known this wonderful way of life. And I would have never worked with a bunch of men in New York that simply for the very reason that the fellowship doesn't know them personally, they condemn them. And my answer to this is, before you condemn, walk in his or her shoes for a couple of weeks before you form your opinion. I believe in some book called the Bible, it says, he that be without sin, let him cast the first stone. I can never throw any stone. So many times I'm asked what my religion is, and I have to say it's AA. That power, that higher power, it irritates a lot of us. We don't like it so much. It shakes us up. It shakes us up like when we go to church and somebody asks us if our soul is saved. And we squirm and we fidget because we know it isn't. We haven't done anything about it. And the truth hurts. And we get up and we leave. And when we come here, the understanding of a higher power begins to come forth. We have died, resurrected, and reborn again. Reborn to live again as men and women, respectfully. And truly today, you are, ladies and gentlemen, what a resurrection. And truly like the resurrection of being entombed in a tomb that the stone was too huge to be moved by human hands. And then on the morning when the sun rose and they came to the tomb, it was open and he had arisen. When so many of us have reached the depths of despair, down into the valley of the shadow of death, and we cry out for help, and our call is answered by another AA who knows our problem. We become to live again. We become to know and realize that there is a purpose for us, and it's in this fellowship. So many times people say to me, old-timers, New York is this, New York is that. And they're not honest. Absolutely, they're not honest. Unless you were there, unless you sat there alongside of us, how can you talk about it? The Board of Trustees, the non-alcoholics, and the alcoholics are all sincere. Some of them that go back during the year don't give another full week. They take that out of their working time because they can't get a vacation. Some of them take their vacation at that time of the year. And those that are interested, you'll see, attend every meeting. And there's a lot crammed into that 1 week of 365 days. That to you may not seem very important, but worldwide it is very important. And if you attend regularly, you're tired when the meeting closes on Saturday. And you fall asleep on the plane coming back. But it's a wonderful, clean, wholesome feeling. I don't think our President of the United States feels any better than I do at being selected as your delegate. You see, before, a miracle. I remember a few years back when I happened to be the chairman of our Long Beach conference in those days, a check was given to me for $3,000. The only thing on that check was the name Harry H. Talent. Now, being a liar and a thief and a cheat, I could very readily have taken that check, spent it, and nothing could be done about it. But you, God, and Alcoholics Anonymous showed a thief how to become honest. That I took the check and spent it for the purpose which it was intended for. But prior to coming to this fellowship, associating with you in this wonderful way of life, I stood in front of judges for thievery, for murder, and for a lot of other nasty things. No, I'm not tonight's clean drunk. I didn't come here for you to love me. I didn't come here to win any votes in popularity. I never want to get out too far in front of you because I'm afraid I might fall. I want to walk shoulder to shoulder with you and depend upon you for my strength. And if so many of you remember that wonderful song that Rhoda Heaver used to sing, whether it was this Billy Sunday, Beulah Land. And I love that song about we stand on the shores. We look away across the sea where mansions are prepared for you and me, and how true this is. You don't have to be a Christian to go to heaven. All you have to do is to be a helper. Not so long ago, I was speaking out of town, and when I got there, the place was kind of packed, and I couldn't find a place to park for 4 blocks. So I thought, by George, you know I'm coming. And about 5 blocks away, I found a little spot to fit into, and I hurried up and parked the car. I was so anxious, I didn't even lock it. And then when I got to the meeting, my ego was punctured. It went way down because I saw the main attraction was a Baptist church over on the other corner. Now, I don't know how many of you are Baptists, and I care less, but they certainly were enjoying religion that day because the roof was a-bouncing, the windows was a-shaking, and the amens were rolling out that front door like bowling balls in a billiard alley. And I kind of liked it. And I stood on the corner. And every once in a while, I hear a loud amen, and about 5 minutes later, a big bump. And then I could remember as a little boy, the old boys in the amen corner, you know. When the preacher said something they liked, they shouted, hallelujah, they jumped 10 foot in the air, and they came down with a bump. And then I shook myself because it was getting late, and I was to take part in the AA meeting. Well, it was in the summertime, and the windows were open. And the old boy, he tried to outshout me, but he didn't have a prayer chance in the world because I outshouted him. But I couldn't compete with the boys in the amen corner. Every once in a while, that big amen would roll out and that big bump would come. But both meetings let out at the same time. And we met in the crosswalk. And they were laughing and smiling. Then the thought struck me. God had been in both places at the same time. He hadn't deserted us, or I. I had deserted him. And how true this is as a higher power walks in this fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Divinely from the very start when Bill and Bob met. Years ago, only 30 that you and I that wanted to live had the chance to. You and I that wanted to believe in the only authority in this fellowship, the book. That you and I would read not only the lines but between the lines. That you and I would believe at the end of the ABCs God could and would if he were sought. That you and I would believe and try to incorporate the 12 steps daily. Not for perfection, but for progress. And that we would help each other, not condemn. And that we would stand ready to help the one that fell. And that we wouldn't stand back if we got a little mess on us. Take your own inventory from the very first day that you came home. And then wonder if it worked. Don't deny anything in this fellowship. Your General Service Board is your head. It sounds so anonymous. It sounds so far away. It could be located right in L.A. It could be located here. What has location to do with it? The thought is the participation, the sharing, the understanding that even the words in the front of your big book are incorporated into the third legacy manual, that they weren't just made to be put on a shelf. I'm very ashamed to say that lots of my own groups that I go to don't have the third legacy manual on the literature rack. There's nothing secret about AA. It's for the members. Get it. Read it. So many people tried to take shortcuts than they did in our meeting list. They took the short side of the tradition. Go to the big book and open it and read the long form of the 12 traditions and see how much more meat that you get out of it. So many people want to start a meeting and say, let's not make it too long, let's say an hour is enough for a drunk to sit through. God, he's suffered all his life, he's not going to suffer anymore. He don't have to pay any dues, there are no dues or no fees. There's an obligation. You hang around long enough and you'll find out what it is. You know, I haven't laid under the 7th Street Bridge for quite a number of years. I talked down in Venice the other night, and I could hear the waves lapping under the pier, and that used to be my bedroom out in Santa Monica. And when it got cold, I'd bury down in the sand like a sand crab. And then I moved downtown when it got into wintertime, and I'd get under the 6th Street Bridge, and they didn't have no diesel engines then, they had the big hoggers. And when they came in and put on the brakes and the wheels spun and the steam shot up under the concrete, this was the heat for our apartment. Sure, I've come a long way and I know it. The suit that I have on, the shirt that I have, the tie, the very breath that I give out, I owe to you and God. Remarkable? Many are called and few are chosen. Some say this fellowship is easy. I say it's hard. It puts all the responsibility on the individual to do this, him or herself. There is no saying that you have to do this. How much of yourself will you give? How much do you give? When you started for this convention, did you thank God? And when you arrive home, you won't forget to thank him for your safe arrival? There's a little boy of mine, 9 years old now at home. He says grace at our table. He knows all about his father. He knows his father is an ex-con. I'm not ashamed of it. I did it, and I paid the price. That has nothing to do with me being an Alcoholics Anonymous. It is my conduct, my attitude, the way that I live my AA life and share with you the things that you have taught me. We didn't come here to compare reputations. And I didn't come here to pile up money in any warehouse. I came to live. To live in a way of life that I've never known. And truly, it's wonderful to get up in the morning and look out, even if it's smog up on drifting in a haze, or to walk out onto the lawn in your bare feet and pick up the newspaper. It's wonderful to breathe without being sick. I love a newcomer who stinks. I love one that smells so full of liquor that others move away from him. I want to get real close to him. It reminds me of the things that I can do. Not so long ago, we had Bill filmed down in one of the groups, and I was to be the speaker the following week, and when I went back there, of course, some of them that came to see the film hadn't come to the meeting, and one very intelligent gentleman came in, and he turned to me and he said, you can't be an alcoholic, you don't look like one. And I said, I don't know what an alcoholic looks like. He let that sink in, and then he said, do you ever have a problem with drinking? And I said, a little bit. And he began to give very wittingly and wise remarks surrounding to the people that were sitting there. And when the leader announced my name as a speaker, he turned to me very indignant, and he said, you didn't tell me you were going to be the speaker for the night. And I told him that wasn't very important. And it wasn't. Were I not to be here today, somebody would be in my place. You see how little you amount to as an individual? But as a body as a whole, in the 95 countries in the 11,050 groups, guided by General Service of New York, that's how important it is. And to those of you that serve as CSRs, those of you that serve as committeemen, give your full thought and your full time, not for personality, but for the life and the breath and the workability of this fellowship. So many people don't come to a general service meeting because they think it's dry. How do you think it ever got started in the first place? By drunks. Even your own business, any business that you happen to be in, has to be guided by a board, by a head. You that are not in the executive branch are directed by supervisors or performance. You do your best to prove your ability so that you can move up another notch, then move up in AA and move to the top of the level. 95% of this fellowship will tell us what to do and only 5% will do it. And I've seen it happen every time. I've been on every committee there is in this fellowship and my ego is still so large that I told Bill last April that when he got sick, move out and I'd take over. There's nothing slow about me at all. I could never be good at anything in my life. Now, I don't know about you, but I know on my second trip back to the Maryland State Penitentiary, but for the grace of God and some interested people, I'd walk the steps to the gallows. I'm grateful that I'm an alcoholic. You see, each one of us has a little quirk in himself, a little something that we don't let go. So many times you hear people say, get up and say, it's none of your business what I did. I'm not going to tell you. No, keep it in. Keep it in like a skeleton in a closet, and then after you have made years of sobriety, open the door and have it slam in your face because you forgot something. Get rid of the garbage. Throw it away. Why I love to talk, and I talk almost every night in the week, is because I sleep very good. Publicly, I confess every night to the things that I've done in the past. My life in AA is all AA. It has to be. I can't put a little bit in. I have to put my whole life into it. The book says we're not saints and neither are we God. How true it is. But did you ever stop to think the power that you have in your hand with a newcomer when he cries out to you for help, God, how do I stop drinking? And you don't have the answer. None of us have the answer. It's only by example. And how good of an example can you be? When he asks you the simple question about what do you do in AA? What is general service? You don't know anything about it, you say forget it. You might as well say to him if he asks you what is a higher power and you tell him make it a doorknob if you don't want to say God. You know what a doorknob is. It's to open and shut a door. Make it a power light bulb. The current is by a generator that can fail. Build not your house on sand, but on rock. On rock a foundation that 350,000 walk sober today. I could have said 450. I could have said 550. But again, requested to say 350,000 for the simple reason that we don't keep any records. And already once today you heard that the door swings both ways. And truly it does. But I have never found the name of the doorkeeper. And I don't think I want to. Because then it would take away the mystery. What it would swing for me tomorrow, this afternoon, or tonight, I don't know. But driving up here was wonderful. The heat didn't bother us. We talked about the back roads that we came through the oil fields. We talked about our drinking days and what a difference it was. And when the sun went down in a ball of fire, it looked like God had drawn the mantle over the field. And where could a drunk's thoughts have been in the old days? And as you go to the joint up at Lompoc on a Sunday morning, when the flowers are in bloom, you smell the fragrance miles before you start up the canyon. And every once in a while, outside of the deer season, the deer come down to the side of the road and meet you. Then you think of all the free life outside, and you think of all the beauty, and then suddenly you're enclosed in a wall that is stone and surrounded by guards. And you're in another world. And you're in a world, you know, where men like you have the same kind of illness or are confined and crying out for help and can't get out. And you go to carry the message. And when they do come out, stand beside them. Help them. They're human just like you and I. They've been caught. Some of them are repeaters time and time again, but our book tells us we're not saints and we're not judges and we're not God. And I have been robbed many a times at home from my various friends who I took in. And I may be robbed many times more, but I too was a thief. How can I condemn? How can I criticize? I didn't come here for that. Some time ago, I was asked about the higher power. And I'll very shortly tell you that God and I had a little bit of argument when I was about 8 years old. Now, this is no big decision. I made it. I knew that Sundays were going to be very miserable for me. And as a little boy, I hated every Sunday because the torture began on Saturday night. In the days, those old days, we had no plumbing on the inside. It was all outside. We had no bathtub, so you took the Saturday night bath in front of the coal range, in front of a big wooden tub that had to be soaked on a Friday night so it swell up the seams and hold the water. Now, I went and bought some shaving lotion the other day, and when I got into the store, the smell of the lotion soap liked to knock me down. But in those days I'm speaking about, they only had two kinds of soap, and they both stunk. And they were Fels Naphthol and Octagon, and they were yellow. And they were full of coil oil. And, you know, they had the scrub brushes in those days. They had no hardwood floors. They were all Georgia pine. And the scrub brushes were about that long, and the bristles were about that high. And that's what they scrubbed the little boy's back with. Between that brush and that soap, your back broke out in an itch, and you were miserable. Now, as old as I am today, this finger fits real good. No trouble at all. This finger still don't fit. It hurts. But I had a big Irish grandmother who used to take that finger and put a washcloth over top of it and dig for potato bugs little boys were supposed to have in their ears. And it would come out this side. And I was miserable. We didn't have much money then. We don't have much money now. It makes no difference. Our nightgowns and our pillowcases and bed sheets were made out of the flour sacks and sugar bags that we got at the corner bakery for 25 cents a dozen. We took them home, and your grandmother or your mother breached the buying name out of them and sewed them together. And then another thing, I think my family wanted a girl more than they did a boy. Because I arrived, and after I began to grow, I sprouted curls. And I had 30 or 40 of the most beautiful curls you ever want to see hanging down to here. And they caused me a lot of trouble. And then in those days, too, they didn't have none of these fancy dances that you ladies have now, like the bobby pins, the clip-ons, these fancy turbans you spit on the ends, you know, and hold your hair up. They had rats. With a piece of wire about that long, and it was covered with leather, and they stuck this through the curl, and they crimped it over, and when you went to bed with about 20 or 30 of these things dangling on your face, you were miserable. And then when you got up in the morning, the real torture started, because the combs they made in those days weren't plastic. They were made out of iron. And as they combed the curl out, the comb wouldn't break, but the hair would come with it. And the tears would come down your eyes and burn your cheeks. And then they put this Buster Brown collar on you that spread way out here, and it wouldn't turn up, so they had to take that same finger, and they'd poke, and they'd poke, and they'd poke, and they'd almost kill you, poking you to death. And then the little shirt that they gave you had to be real frilly, and it came up under your chin like this, and it itched. And the pants that they jammed you down in were too tight in the crotch. But the payoff came when you put on your high-button shoes. Those shoes had 26 buttons. And I got so mad when I started at the bottom, when I got to the top, I yanked. And as I did, I opened up the eye in that top button. And as I very quietly said in church alongside of my grandmother, that button would pop, and my sock, which when it was locked only stayed that much above the top of the shoe, would slip down, and as it did, it would pull the hair, and it would itch. And as I'd reach down to scratch it, the sailor hat that I had on, the ribbon would tickle the back of my neck. And my grandmother would say to me, if you don't keep still when I get you home, I'm going to give you a licking. Well, right then and then, I made up my mind that when I grew big enough and old enough to cut out that crown foolery, I would, and I did. No problem about God. I knew if I hung around, I'd probably wind up being a preacher, and I didn't want to be a preacher. I wanted to be a liar, I wanted to be a thief, and I wanted to be a cheat. God, it's good to tell you. It makes you feel good all over. It's wonderful that you can express yourself. And this is for each and every one of you. The reason that you don't go front, the reason that you don't go to New York as a delegate, the reason that you don't take part as a GSR, is the individual. And if it's anything else, it's personalities in a group. And who can afford personalities and resentment It's silly. The door is open, like the tomb. When you walk in, you're received, you're welcome. 350,000, what happened to the 350,000 30 years ago? Who told them they had a disease? Who told them that they had problems with alcohol? The Bible says 2,000 years ago they gathered together in the vineyard and they partook of the wine until their eyes got heavy and their tongues wagged. Evidently they had a problem then too. How about your Oxonians and how about the Washingtonians? Didn't we take six steps from them and add six more too? And when Bill was asked, why don't you make more? And he said, my God, it sounds like the 12 disciples. And how true it is. Read them. Try to carry them out to the best of your ability. And it might hamper you a little bit. But if you try it every day, you make progress. Progress is better than perfection. You take a surgeon that is very, very skillful. He has to continue to study each year because new things develop. And so the new things develop in this fellowship. You heard the speaker this morning say, yes, you weren't accepted if you have a wristwatch. Well, thank God now, 83rd and 3rd percent coming in are youngsters. And you should bend to one of the young people's conventions. So ask, who under 21 here is an alcoholic? And God, you should see the hands go up. And think of the lives that you are saving and the careers that you're saving by those people coming in so young. They don't have to go to the bottom of the heap like I did. They can stop now with your help, the grace of God, and Alcoholics Anonymous. And I remember, too, I lost my father. He was a drunk. He committed suicide years ago in Pennsylvania. He was the one that set me alongside the free lunch on the old oak counter, old bar counter. The copper water trough that ran down the front with water running in it all the time. When you first went in, you put your foot up onto it, you spit into it, you got a little drunk, your foot slipped into it, you got completely drunk, you fell into it, and they dragged you outside. My ambition in those days wasn't to be a lawyer or a doctor, not anything important. I wanted to be the driver of the brewery wagon that delivered the beer. He was always a big fat Dutchman who drove a pair of double gray horses, and he put a pudding fender on the pavement, he'd roll off a keg of beer and never miss. He'd come in and get what he wanted. Oh, yes, you ladies had a place there, too. In those days, you wore half aprons, and you had your purse on a chain, and it hung at your waist. And they had family rooms in the back of the bar. And you'd come down the street, and you'd knock on the door, and then you'd have your bucket under your apron, and you'd come in. And the bartender would take care of you. Then you'd go home, and you'd pull the blinds down. You had an illness. There was no Alcoholics Anonymous. The pints and the half pints were clear in those days. They had no label. And there were no fancy bottles on the back bar. Only two kegs of liquor. And the pints and half pints were filled from these. And I can see today the man filling up the half of the pint, reaching over into the plate of corks, and picking out the right cork and putting it in, turning it up on the bar and wedging it in and sliding it down to you. No, my mind hasn't gone blank. I've learned to tell the truth. What a difference. I don't have to spend 3/4 of this day preparing a defense for the people that I'm going to meet tomorrow. It saves a lot of time. I may not be important as President Johnson or any of the notable dignitaries, but I guarantee you I'm just as happy, if not happier. You see, I carried a great load, and you took it off my shoulders. And I can live easy as long as I want to. And then when I go out and get drunk again, I take that load back. And only this time it's heavier and it's harder. And I know it's going to be twice as hard, but you see, I did it. I canceled out my membership by taking that first drink. And in the very beginning, I knew it. I knew it when I took it. Because I picked it up. And I downed it myself. Nobody ever poured any liquor down my throat. I was always too ready to grab it. So many of us dwell on dignity. Well, we've got lots of dignity in our family. I don't want any of it. I don't like dignity. You know, I've got six uncles, and the three that I love show just how I grew up and how I wanted to grow up. And the other three show just the opposite. And they're very dignified, they're very rich, And the one that I don't like, I shouldn't say don't like, that's not right. The one that I don't get along with looks like me. Every place we go, we're accused of being each other. He's got a job, and so-and-so got another job. He's like, if he fell down a well and it was real dirty, you know what he'd come up with. But he's been in Washington for quite a few years, and I don't care if you're a Republican or I'm a Democrat. Politics don't have anything to do with this. But this man I'm speaking about, his name's Charlie Hallett, and he's a congressman. And he's my uncle, and I just don't get along with him, and he don't get along with me. And we look alike. And every place we go, I'm accused of being Charlie, he's accused of being Harry. And one person up north some time ago said, you ought to be proud of your uncle. And I said, proud? What for? He never done anything for me. He got me into a lot of trouble. He would say, I'm supposed to be so-and-so, and I'm not there at all. And he had that job for 39 years. And now they turned around, going to make a judge out of me, and got good sense. But he's a wonderful guy, and I don't have anything to do with him. Then we got another uncle that's the dean of some university, and he's so smart that where I would say potatoes, he says it in three words of Latin. And I'm afraid to read these letters because I don't want to get that educated. It ain't nothing in it, you know? And then in April at the conference, I told him I wasn't going to be able to go back to the anniversary because I had commitments in my own area prior to that time. And first things are first. But the real reason I was awful happy I didn't have to go back because I got another uncle and he's right there. And this is a smart cookie. He's one of the best surgeons they have in Canada. And I understand that he can cut your arm and leg off and put it in a deep freeze. And a month or so later, take it out and put it back on. It works all right. No problem. And he's got a lot of money. Well, he's going to get in trouble. So he's writing about our family tree. And you know, I never knew we had a family tree. And I care less. But I know years ago when I was a drunk and still drinking, I used to wind up in San Diego. And I got one of the best friends in the world down there. Not human. He don't live in town. It lives in a zoo. And he's in the first gorilla cage from the gate. And I call him Joe. He's about the oldest gorilla they got down there. And when I was drinking, I used to wander down into the zoo and I'd sit up on the concrete and I'd talk for hours to this gorilla. And he'd come over to me and I don't never know whether he understood me or not, but he sure was intelligent looking, more so than I. And whenever he'd grab hold of them bars, these things that I got fingernails, he's got them too. You better believe me. And when he opens his paw, the creatures in my hand, he's got them also. And one day they were having an argument way down the other end with the younger monkey. And everybody went down there and old Joe sat down and he put his big foot out between the bars and he wiggled it like this. So I took my shoe and my sock off and I looked at my foot and I looked at his and I didn't like what I saw so I put him back on. So we got a family tree. I ain't gonna worry about it. Now, when he gets to the point where he finds out that if he admits that he's a Hallett, he originated from Peter Stuyvesant, a one-legged pirate in Long Island. And I only went to the fourth grade, but I remember a little bit of history. And it says the Blue Bloods were afraid to come over on those three ships. They were ex-cons in paid passage. So it don't pay to dig too far back. And that's what I love about this fellowship. You come in here, you don't have to say my blood is blue and I got $30 in my pocket. If you tell the truth, you got about 30 cents. And it pays to be honest. And there's one thing I've learned. There's quite a few old-timers around in my area that need to be honest. They say to me, I talk to so-and-so in New York, and I go to New York, and I say, so-and-so talk to you, and they say, never heard of him. Well, what do you gain by lying? What do you gain? It was lying that started me on the path of downhill thievery. It was by being honest that I begin to grow and live again. And surely, what should I gain by coming here and bragging to you? I remember, too, a certain Saturday night that I walked in. And a man stuck out his hand and he said, I'm Lee. You've got a problem. You've come to the right place. Thank God for Lee. I was thinking I was dirty. And I had no place to go. Lee's at the big meeting upstairs today. Most of my friends that came in with me are upstairs. You know, that's a big meeting. It's one of the biggest in the world. For those who've seen the GSL film strip number one or two, in the very beginning it shows the AA meeting and the doors open and saying, the biggest AA meeting in the world. They've made one mistake. It's not the biggest. The biggest is upstairs. Jim Judd is gone. Frank Jenks is gone. Tom Rogers is gone. George McDonald is gone. And as the roll call decreases down here, it gets bigger. You know, I like to visualize if we walk the 12 steps to that open door where we'll find God. The stairway is lined with the hands of the AAs from the groups here to support us. And those that have gone before are reaching through to help us in. And even in that meeting with the spirit that prevails at every AA meeting, we reach out our hand and we grab hold of his. If we're a little squeamish about that, we can reach out and grab hold of a handful of the atmosphere and put it in your pocket. And when you get a little upset and bewildered tomorrow, reach in, bring it out, and use it. These are the things that you've taught me. You see, I travel with every circus and every carnival in the United States. I will never forget certain things that I've done. They were thievery. They were putting our hands in other people's pockets. I was one of the best pickpockets in the East at one time. I live with crime. I don't care whether you love me. What you require me for membership is only a desire to stay sober. If you don't want to walk down the middle of the street with me, walk across the street. Because this is mine since 1955, as long as I stay sober. Nobody can take it away from me. Only I can give it up. And that is your Alcoholics Anonymous Fellowship of General Service Office. That is the entire body that you represent as individual members. This is what your contributions from all over the 11,050 groups go to support. Then you ask, what do they support? They support other alcoholics that can't afford it, like two groups down in Mexico that can't afford it. They help them. That takes and supports and lends money to foreign countries to publish their own big book, to start their own general service office until they get on their feet. These are facts that you can very well learn yourself, if you but will. These are facts that are needed by every member to know. How do you think I gained the information? How do you think that I know? I came like you. I knew nothing when I came here. I used to only go to groups that had the 12 steps on the wall. And where did the 12 steps come from? From the book Alcoholics Anonymous. And as chapter 5 was read in the 12 steps, I followed them on the wall because, God, I wanted what you had. I knew you were happy. I knew that I didn't meet you in a drunk tank. I knew I didn't meet you in front of the judge, that the only place that I could meet you was in AA. So many people say, I'd love to come. And I like to change that. I have to come to live. There's no doubt about it. I haven't got to the place where I can say I can depend upon myself now. I'm not taking back my will and my life into my hands. I'd be a fool. I'm leaving it up to you and God to guide my life. That's why I came here. I came for help. I came to join the two hands, the praying hands of an alcoholic. This is where I receive it. I came to you to answer my problems, my questions, not to sit in the back of the room and criticize. We have 527 meetings a week in L.A. We have 107 that are closed. We have 18 that are daytime meetings on one Sunday and 127 more during the week. Have you ever taken your meeting list apart? Have you read the last 12 concepts in the 12 concepts that Bill says God could and would if he still thought that this movement would go on forever and that the combinations of the writing of the 12 concepts are the entire 30 years into this fellowship? The praying to come to the conclusion that as Bill stood up on the floor last year and said, yes, he approved of Dr. Jack and the structuring of the board. These are just as important to a member of Alcoholics Anonymous as your clubs, as your churches, because truly this is yours. And isn't it wonderful that we can belong to a fellowship like this? Isn't it wonderful that we really don't have to pay any dues or fees. I've been told what time to shut up. I told them when they asked me how long I wanted to talk, I could go on for 2 hours. And some of you are yawning, and some of you are looking at your watch. This is fine. But when you sat in the bar and it got near 2 o'clock, you raised hell when the man shut the door. You see, I'm not criticizing. I'm just telling you. But when I came here, the meeting stopped after 2 hours, and it went on the outside for two more because we wanted AA. I don't know what kind you've got. I can't help it. I know what kind I've got. And it's my insurance against the temptations that I'm going to meet tomorrow. Why I am here today. If I hadn't been here today, I'd been to another committee meeting, and I'd been to the Hollywood Saturday Night Tonight, because when I'm not talking, I'm sitting and listening. Because if you don't listen, you can never learn anything. So many of you think I have the answers to your problems. No, I don't. I can only tell you the miracles that I have taken part in. I can only tell you the miracles of the families that have been brought together. And I can only tell you the miracles of the Good Shepherd. You've learned them. You learned them at your mother's knee, or you cried on your father's shoulder when you got hurt as a little boy or a little girl. And when you went to Sunday school and you won those ribbons for knowing verses in the Bible were very important to you then. But that was as a child. And as you grew to be an adult, you took over the running of your own life. Right then it would seem to me it began to become a lot unmanageable. And there was one story that I loved so great with the Good Shepherd. How I loved that story. I never fully went into detail of it, but it seems like he was the shepherd of a flock of sheep that numbered 100. And a storm came up and scattered them. And he was told, after he had gathered 99 together, to come on in to the warmth of the barn in safety. And he said no. He'd rather hunt the last one. And I like to think that that last little sheep was us alcoholics, running around bewildered and lost, because the Good Shepherd hunted and hunted. And finally, when he found him, the scrawny little lamb, black, wedged between two rocks, and when he picked him up out of the rocks and set him on his feet, he was too weak to stand. The Good Shepherd reached down and put both arms under him. Into the barn, to warmth, to love, and safety. And I like to think that that Good Shepherd is our higher power. Call him what you want to, call him what you may. But he'll reach down. He'll pick you up. He'll carry you to safety. He may bring your loved ones back. He may tie your family together again into the place where you too may like to stand on the street corner and hear the old time songs come rolling out the door. No, you don't have to put your collar on backwards. You don't have to wear a long frock-tailed coat. You just have to believe in AA every day in the year. And practice your belief. And so you see, that's why a delegate as I was allowed to come, to take part. And I look back into my last three arrests when I began to come home, and I never thought that the day would come that on a Saturday I'd stand in front of a bunch of ladies and gentlemen, and as a delegate to that wonderful Alcoholics Anonymous, think of my last three arrests. And I had been arrested 3 times in 3 days in succession. The steel shield had been pulled across the barred door. I was in the middle of one of the big tanks all by myself, and I knew I'd done something I couldn't remember, and I cared less. Long about 8 in that evening, I was thrown in with my buddies. And here I met a man, never reading or never knowing about the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. In the bottom of chapter 3, it says, "We are like men who have lost their legs and will never grow new ones." I met him that night. 27 years old, and lost both legs as he rolled off a freight car at the knee. The state had given him a pair of artificial limbs. He continued to drink and failed to buy lining for him. His stumps were prickly and raw. We spent the night of putting his limbs on and taking them off and rubbing his stump. This is right. I met the man, 69 or 70, already so bad off without the writers. He couldn't lay on the cold concrete floor, and we held him against the wall with our bodies. This is the night when morning came. I couldn't see the treetops on Elysian Park Hill. I was going blind. Take what you want. Leave what you don't want. Come to learn, not to condemn. Going out the door that night with the bells bouncing, a man of another race, another creed, and another color, and not a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, turned to me on the top step and said, "Alec, you don't look like a drunk. Why don't you join AA?" And he had carried the message to me. You see, our primary purpose is to carry the message to those that still suffer. Yet years ago, right in Westlake Park, when the very first meetings were going on in the Elks Temple, when people that today have 24 and 25 years of sobriety were seeking sobriety, I lay drunk in Westlake Park. Neither one of us knew. One was in the park and one was in the temple. And how do you know that the neighbor next door to you doesn't need your help? I've never worried about anonymity all my life. I break it all over the country. I never worried about breaking anonymity when I tried to kill police at 7th and Broadway at noontime, and my picture and name was in paper. And then when I took the travel cure and moved to Glendale and tore Glendale apart, they knew I was out there. The police at Glendale and Burbank say they're mighty grateful that I joined AA because they now have time for lots of other people. We had a little disturbance down there in the place they called Watts, and it took 5,001 police to take care of it, plus the National Guard, and I got a little resentment. They got all that publicity. It took 400 to take care of me, and I never got on the front page of the newspaper. They always put me in the back. But you see, the neighbors now know different. When I used to get dragged out and pulled into the car, they knew where I was going. The only problem, they didn't know how long I was going to be gone. And isn't it strange? We haven't moved. We get Christmas cards now which say Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to the nicest neighbors in the neighborhood. Isn't it wonderful? You take a dirty piece of linen. It's just a little too short to fit the dining room table, but get a little too big to throw away. You're a little too Scottish. So you keep folding and folding and folding. Finally, one day you yank it out and you send it to the cleaners. And when it comes back, the colors are all fresh. It's neatly pressed. You take it into the dining room, you unfold it, and lo, it fits the dining room table. And so we come to this fellowship, broke, bleeding, crying out for help. And as we grow into ladies and gentlemen who carry the message to those that still suffer, that are still a little bit sicker than I. And I want to thank you for having me up here. I want to thank you for letting me share with you the things that God reached down and taught Dr. Bob and Bill so you and I could live today. Thank you, and God bless you.